All right, let's rock and roll.
Welcome to Cross Platform Podcast, where we discuss how to solve productivity problems across platforms. I'm Augusto Pinot.
And I'm Mark Gelwicks.
And today we are coming back from our conversation on flow management tools. This is a part two. First episode came out last week. And so let's continue in the topic. What are those tools that we didn't mention or that you mentioned you need to mention again for this week that works for you into coming back, Art?
Well, restoring flow is a challenge that it's hard to find tools that are designed to do just that. There are very few tools out there to get you back on track. The intention of most of them is to keep you from falling off track in the first place, which honestly, most tools don't do particularly well. So what I was trying to figure out is, what do I use during the course of a week that if I do fall off track, what can I use? What is a piece of mechanism, device, whatever, that helps me ease back into the productive sense? And to start off, and it was interesting because we keep a record of our notes within Notion for this show. And the first thing you put in, Augusto, and the first thing I put in are basically the same thing, which is music. Some sort of a music app to be able to keep track of what, you know, to get our mental state back into an energy lift state. And I identified your music app of choice. As of late, I've been using YouTube Music a lot. Kind of like it, like the interface, that they're doing good work with it, so I've been sticking with that. But I think that, for me, is one of the biggest pieces. If I find myself especially dropping to a low level of energy, being able to turn some music on that's higher energy music that I'm very familiar with, that I don't have to focus on, can often be enough to give me a boost to get back into whatever I was doing, whatever I wrote down before I left, as we were talking about last week. So
for me, the music, yeah, before we move on,
no.
For me, the music depends. And I should use more music than what I used. Okay, let me put that disclaimer. So I have a particular thing that I hear when I do my quick review, okay? And that is a Beethoven 9th Symphony with Herb von Karajan. And I have mentioned that. I've been using that since I began doing my weekly review. I don't know, 2004, 3, something like that. When I began doing the weekly review, that was a CD I picked. At that time was a CD, okay? And I've been using it now for all this time. And my brain, as soon as that thing starts playing, my brain goes into weekly review mode. It works great. For writing, I use Rock in Spanish, regardless if I'm writing in Spanish or in English. And I have a playlist on my Apple device that has basically live songs from 3 or 4 artists in Spanish. That's all. And then I have another one that is also live music. That one I have in Amazon Music, okay, where is just to lift my spirit, okay? Hey, I need 5 minutes of song, and that soon will normally do. The last thing I do is Mozart, and is when I want to really, you know, have the music, but I need to tone out the music, and Mozart do that well for me. And, well, I said the final, but the other one is if I'm doing brain dead activities, then I tend to put podcast, and then the voice doesn't bother me, and I can listen to the voice, but need to be certain activities. That's really for activities that do not require me to have the brain so I can pay attention to the podcast. Other than that, it doesn't work.
Yeah, I found that podcasts, honestly, for me, are like leaf raking background sound. Things that require no actual thought process.
Correct. You're right.
I need to pay attention to it. If I'm not paying attention, I'm not getting any value out of the podcast. I have the same challenge with audiobooks. So it has to be typically something I'm doing with my hands that doesn't require a lot of conscious focus to do those things. So, you know, if I'm out in the workshop sorting,
cleaning email, like
cleaning email, I tend to lose focus a little bit into it.
Yeah, if I don't need to, if I, depending what I'm doing, you know, so this is my process to clean email. I first get rid of the trash, and then I go and I move, you know, what I need to process into a folder. So that cleaning I can do with a podcast because I'm not thinking. It's just a matter of these things. And then when I go to processing, that now requires me to pay attention and read and think. But that's a process that allows me to do it faster.
So music or audiobook or whatever, that's one way to kind of reset your brain, because you know that's going to take your brain to a different state. Mm-hmm. And it's either going to take you back to a positive or help you climb out of a negative, one way or the other. One of the things that I keep inside of, specifically inside of Notion, I have what, and I've talked about it before, I have what I call a task candy board. And what it is, it's a board that's laid out that has lots of little tasks that need to be done in various different categories of things that take very little time, that are low importance, and can sit there for an extended period of time, you know, like filing. Well, if I find myself that I've slid into a state of non-productivity, I'm just having a real hard time staying on task, I will actually stop and pull one of those cards off of that board and do that task. It's a completely unrelated task. A lot of times it's like, go empty the dishwasher. If I'm in the middle of writing a presentation and I've hit a creative block, I'll stop, walk away, go empty the dishwasher, then come back. Just that little bit of interval time, because it gives my brain background processing time, mm-hmm. it allows me to kind of restart that creative flow. I find it works very consistently. I also find it works very well when I have mental roadblocks on things. When I can't figure something out, I literally just stop and walk away from it. It just stay there. I'll go to do something completely unrelated. And then when I come back, and or usually in the process of doing that unrelated thing is when I will come up with the answer that I couldn't get previously. So that, to me, that's a big step in that flow state recognition, is that sometimes it gets blocked and you just need to clear the blockage and then keep moving forward. We both have talked about in the past having multiple devices, but you're talking about specifically having multiple devices for specific tasks. Why don't you dig into that?
Correct. And as I mentioned last episode, you know, I don't do multitasking. And I understand if you come from the outside and you look my office and you look the way I work, you will say, what do you mean? You are multitasking all day. No, I don't. I'm not trying to do two things at the same time, and I don't try to do two things on one device at the same time. What I have learned is that I can refocus relatively quick if I have the thing set up in the right way. So I have mentioned there is 9 screens in this office. That means in the way my brain understands that I can work in 9 things at once. Okay, but I don't try to do in a device 2 things. Okay? No. If I'm working on the iPad, I'm only working, you know, 1 thing on the iPad, and I may move to another device to do something else and to another device to move something else. That distinction on devices and everything else allows me to refocus, okay, and be able to refocus back. But I'm not trying to do 2 things at the same time. So there are processes, for example, if I'm doing, there are moments that I need, as you said, process things on the back. Perfect. I begin writing in here, a stop, okay, go to move something else here on the left while that is processing on the back of my brain, and I will come back when the time is correct. That's the reason I love the multiple devices, but not because I'm trying to do 2 things at the same time on the same device. It's because I use each device to do 1 thing. So when I'm in front of this device, this is what I'm paying attention right now and not anything else.
Yeah, that's a different. A lot of people would think that you can do multitasking through multiple windows, through multiple tabs and things like that. And I agree with you. I don't think it works the same way. I mean, I don't have as many screens as you have, but for the screens that I have, being able to have one screen or part of one screen dedicated to one task, and I know that works well there, makes it a lot easier, especially when I'm working on things that have a tendency to be interrupt driven. So for example, if I'm working on a longer proposal and I'm going to be working on it for say 4, 6, 8 hours in the day, I can guarantee that's going to get interrupted at some point. There's no way I'm going to be able to be locked in, dedicated, focused to it. So if I'm able to park it somewhere where I can work on it and then deal with an interruption, then come back to it without having to save it, go reopen it, go find it, get set back up.
That is the saving of time.
Yeah. And I think while it's a saving of time, to me, it's a reduction in friction too. It gives you an opportunity to just slide back into what you were doing. Plus, and this is kind of a weird subconscious thing, having that, I deal with object permanence all the time where, you know, if I can't see it, it doesn't exist anymore. Things disappear on me. So if I have a document or something that I'm working on and I put it away, I may actually forget that I was working on it. And then I'll come back to it and say, oh, okay, yeah, I was working on that thing. That's what I was supposed to be doing. But if I can park it over here off to the side so that I still sort of see it out of the corner of my eye, I can keep reminding myself that, yeah, that's a thing I need to do. Virtual desktops do that somewhat well, but they still get out of the line of sight. But they are nice in the way that you can set up, you know, different compact environments and switch between them.
Yeah, I tried that. The Mac had that many, I don't know what they were called, spaces, I think. And you could do that. And that was not the same effect as the two computers. And that was the reason I begin moving with two computers. I think it was, when is the tablet PC came? 2004, 2005, 2003?
Yeah,
that around that
right.
time. Around that time was when I began traveling with two laptops. And really, it made a difference. And I remember people at that time saying, oh, well, why you just don't bring a screen or connect it? No, I can connect this laptop to a screen, but this is one unit. Having two laptops allow me to do exactly what we were discussing. I can move there and my brain says, oh, this is not the same laptop, so automatically make the switch. And I learned this by the browsers, and I mentioned this last week. I've been advising people to use two different browsers for many years. And what I discover with the browsers is when you play on one and work on the other one, even if you do Command-T and open the tab unconsciously, your brain will register the dissonance. Wait, yeah. You are on your work browser and you are playing. And that is enough for me to stop and bring it back from the unconscious rabbit trail to a conscious one and make the decision. Okay, nope. Let me now copy-paste, go to play, or let me copy-paste or capture this and go to work, back to work. The same thing happened when you change the whole device. The brain knows what is what you are focused and what is what you are doing.
An interesting extension of the browser issue. I hadn't realized I've been doing it as of late, but I have been. I have Chrome and I have Edge, and I run them at the same time. Edge is my primary browser. Chrome is what I call my work browser for my primary engagement. And the reason why I used to isn't so much to be more productive. It's the fact that it's easy to leave Chrome logged into my work account for Office 365 and keep Edge logged in to my personal 365 account and not have to keep logging in and out every time I want to do things. Mm-hmm. So just by functionality, they're two virtual devices, but they're not really different devices. But it's that same type of segmentation. So, yeah, unconsciously, I have wound up doing what you're outlining, and it seems to work really well. So, a couple of things just to move it along a little bit for my own purposes. I use a paper and pencil.
Ooh.
Write stuff down, or your yeah, I know it sounds hardcore. It's difficult to fathom. It's amazing. Cross
platform. It's a different platform too.
It is an entirely different platform, but I have found often that when I'm sitting there writing something or if I'm working on something and I'm trying to do it digitally, just the change in moving to a truly analog platform to do things changes how my brain is processing things. It mm-hmm. slows me down a little bit. It forces me to think through things a little bit because, again, I'm handwriting them, not typing them. And it's just that dynamic shift. So if I find that I'm losing the flow, I often will grab a notebook and paper and start mentally working through something, trying to get into where I need to be rather than trying to do it all digitally in front of me. So that's a big thing. And using an activity tracker, being able to look and see that I've been working on a particular thing for 25 minutes, 30 minutes, you know, a Pomodoro time or something like that can often be a good way to help you recognize that, yeah, you've only been at it 5 minutes. Figure out, you know, what's going on here. Where is this derailed? So those are big things for me.
Yeah, and I know people who, I don't, but who track their time, you know, precisely, exactly for those reasons. That has never worked for me. It has never motivated me at all, you know. Mm-hmm. I want to be on the activity, whatever I'm going to be on the activity, but I don't track. Oh, I've been 2 minutes in this one.
There's a lot of minutiae that I don't go to either. But it's off. Sometimes it can be helpful to understand what's derailing you mm-hmm. if you can't identify it visually. You know, it's the forest for the trees mindset. If you're using an activity tracker and you're going in and say, you know, you're doing email cleanup and you go back and you look and you realize, oh, I feel like I'm not getting anything done today. And you look at your tracker and you realize, yeah, you've been getting stuff done, but you've spent 4 hours cleaning up your email. That can be enough to give you that push back into, oh, okay, I really need to be working on these other things. There's a concept. Yeah.
Now that you mention and put it that way, one thing that I do, I wish I do it more consistently than what I do, is I have an accountability partner. My accountability partner and I, or the accountability partner really more than me, you need to admit that, we text in theory every half an hour what we plan to do the next half an hour and what really happened that half an hour. And on those days that I'm hard to keep the flow or that I'm really distracted, that really mm-hmm. saves the day. And that's where I do poorly. I should do it every day, even the days that I'm in really good flow management, but I don't. I really do it in the days that my brain is super scattered.
Okay. Yeah, that's the kind of thing that an accountability partner is an amazingly empowering tool. And I do it kind of indirectly because often if I get off task and then I work from home, if my wife's working from home, for example, and I hear her get up and move through the house, all of a sudden I get like, oops, am I working on something I should be working on? Or am I just kind of futzing here? Do I want her to walk up here and see me just futzing around? She couldn't care less. But for me, it's an accountability piece. It's a reinforcement that I have to commit to somebody to say, hey, you know what? I wasn't exactly being as optimally productive as I should have been. So, and I'm going to be chewing up my own personal time because of that. So yeah, the accountability partner can absolutely be a big thing. We've talked in the past with Francis about the idea of time blocking. And one of the things that I do a little bit is I will actually schedule a meeting with myself. It's going to sound a little corny. It's not a big time block, but what I'll do is if I find, for example, in the morning that I'm struggling with, maybe I'm going to be writing an article and I'm struggling with getting going with that, I will actually schedule a meeting with myself in the afternoon to review my edits. And what that does is if that time is blocked out to review my edits and I haven't gotten anything to edit, that time block is going to feel pretty awkward. Personally awkward, but it's still awkward, which mm-hmm. means that I need to get some actual work done before that time rolls around. It's a personal accountability, but I'm leveraging things like the calendar to help me reinforce that behavior. And I'll admit, sometimes I have to stack those reminders I'll have to put a, you know, talk to the Echo and say, look, give me a reminder in 2 hours that I need to be doing this. Give me a reminder in 3 hours that I need to be at this point, so that I can't allow myself to get sidetracked and distracted or really go off the rails. But I also have to recognize there's a point where it's not worth the fight, that no matter how hard I try, I'm not going to get back on it. I wrote an article about this a while ago over on my blog talking about sometimes it's okay to quit. You're trying real hard. You want to settle in. You want to get some work done. And you, no matter what you do, you just cannot get going. It's just not going to work. At that point, you just need to stop trying that for a while and go find something else to try. Because frustration, anxiety, and anguish are not going to help you get good quality work done.
Correct.
And it's going to take a lot longer too. Finally, the last real tool I use is my coffee pot. I use my coffee maker. I use my hot water pot. I go down, I'll make a cup of tea. I'll make a cup of coffee. That short interval is often enough to give me a chance to come back up and say, it's kind of like the dishwasher I talked about earlier, but it's a little bit more pleasant. Give me a chance to come back and say, okay, where was I? Where do I go? What do I do? But I started using that trick you mentioned last week. Before I walk down to get my cup of tea or coffee, I write down exactly what I was doing before I do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I come back up, I know exactly what I should be doing. And I actually do two things. I do what I was doing, and I also write down what I should be doing when I sit back down. What's the next thing? So that way I don't have to think about it. Because if I have to find that starting place again, it's like reading a book with no bookmark.
Right.
You need to flip through it to find that page. I just need to dog ear it and say, okay, I know exactly where I'm supposed to be and move back on from there.
That's correct.
So do you have any other tools?
You know, I don't. I don't. And I was thinking about the coffee, and I was such a heavy drinker of coffee until last year when I decided to stop drinking coffee, and you mentioned a good point. You make me thought, or you remind me when I quit smoking at 13 years ago. You know, that at the beginning I missed, you know, when people mention, say, oh yeah, I missed the break, you know, more than the actual cigarette, I missed the break. And with the coffee, it's a good point. I missed the break. I make another, you know, sit for a couple of seconds with the, I used to drink espresso shot, but drink here for a couple of seconds, you know, enjoying that steam coming from the cup. So, and I don't have that anymore. So. That was interesting.
It's one of the things that, and I have yet to be able to do it, but my wife does it all the time. She goes and gets a cup of hot water.
I have
done
that.
Put anything in it, just gets a cup of hot water. Now, I'm sorry, I get bored easy, so that's just not happening. But again, it falls in that same principle, and I think the key thing that everybody needs to take away from this is, one, there is no single way to restore a lost flow state. It's going to vary not only by person, but it's going to vary by day. It's going to vary by mood. It's going to vary by energy level. So you've got to kind of build up a toolkit of ways that you can prompt yourself with the recognition that sometimes you just can't get back to where you were. So you have to take a different route and work your way around from another side.
Yeah, and you made a really good point in there. Sometimes what you need to do is to take a different route, and sometimes it's plan. Okay, you know what? Yeah, I'm done with this. Okay, let me jump to this thing or these two things, and then I'm going to come and revisit. And that change tend to be enough to come back into flow.
Yeah, it can make a huge difference, and we have to recognize this is an uphill battle for pretty much everybody. I don't know of anyone. I've never met anyone who has told me flat out, yeah, if I fall out of flow, I do ABC and I'm right back into it. And I have yet to hear that. I would love to hear it. I'd love to see them actually prove it. But I have.
No. The secret handshake, it changed every time.
That's very true. Very true.
Well, follow us where you like to listen to podcasts. Like us. subscribe to us and leave us a review. You can interact with us in personalproductivity.club. We have a channel for cross-platform there. We are Gus Tupinot and Argil Weeks. See you next time from your favorite device.